This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, September 15th, 2022. I'm Caleb Brown. Cloudflare provides services that protect websites from attack, and their customers, as you might imagine, include many disfavored websites that lots of those on the internet want to attack. So what does it mean that Cloudflare has decided to stop protecting the home of many internet trolls, Kiwi Farms? Cato's Will Duffield and Elizabeth Nolan Brown of Reason comment.
Will, you and I had just recorded a podcast talking about Cloudflare and their decision to continue to provide services to people that most people would find sort of abhorrent, at least in a sense, in sort of their activities that they conduct online. And then as soon as we had recorded, they decided, nope, we're gonna change our position on this. So just for people who are unfamiliar with Cloudflare and how companies like this operate on the internet, set the stage for us a little bit in terms of what has happened over the last couple of months and who this company is and who they provide services for.
Cloudflare is a content delivery network and DDoS protection firm that helps websites to stay online. And over the past month, they became the focal point of efforts to remove a troll forum called Kiwi Farms from the internet. They maintained their silence for a while. They then published a document outlining why they felt they shouldn't engage in content moderation, at least for their content delivery services. It differentiated between hosting a website and the sorts of protection from DDoS attacks that Cloudflare offered. But after publishing this document on Wednesday, on Saturday, Cloudflare, in a sort of about face, decided to remove services from Kiwi Farms. And since then, the site has been knocked offline. And in an attempt to keep it offline, critics of the site have run even deeper into the internet stack, getting one of their domains seized in Iceland, and even prompting Google to remove the Google Voice account used by the forum's administrator.
All right. So, Liz, Cloudflare draws a distinction between hosting content and providing services to keep that kind of site online. How do you evaluate sort of this, we should understand, private decision-making among firms?
Yeah, I mean, it obviously, you know, this is, every time something like this happens, people get all like, oh, it's censorship, or it's a Section 230 violation, or it's an antitrust violation. And obviously it's none of those things. On one level, it's sort of a sign that, you know, free markets and free association are thriving and working as they should, because as a private company, you know, Cloudflare can choose to associate with whoever it likes. But I think, you know, the question that this brings up is just that you guys have sort of mentioned is that this just creates a dangerous sort of set of circumstances. Like typically companies like Cloudflare that do back-end services, security services, you know, providing the infrastructure to do newsletters or to host a website or anything like that are more like phone companies. Like they're neutral. That's even the thing the Cloudflare CEO said in a blog post, that it's typically operated more like a phone company, thinking that, you know, even if someone says something racist or sexist or whatever offensive on the phone, you know, the phone company doesn't cancel their service to them. So the question is kind of, you know, should Cloudflare be neutral like that? Should internet infrastructure companies be neutral like that? Or do they need to take a more active approach in controlling sort of what gets to be online or not?
While this is private content moderation, I think the justification for Cloudflare's action sets it apart from a lot of what we see platforms doing. When platforms remove content, they usually do so in order to foster a certain environment on their platform or within their service, prevent people from seeing upsetting content or being offended and leaving. And in this case, Cloudflare claims, says that it finally took action because of threats posted on Kiwi Farms that could pose a danger, and that in essence, it was stepping in because law enforcement had failed in order to make things safe rather than to foster a certain kind of environment or community. Now, I think this can be very concerning because this kind of infrastructural level moderation, when seen as a replacement or used as a replacement for failures of law enforcement, is much more indiscriminate. You're taking down the entire website for everyone who uses it because some people posted threats or personal information. And while there's issues with law enforcement, it's much more of a scalpel when you're prosecuting an individual on the basis of a threat that they've made rather than knocking a website off the internet for everyone.
Liz, Will and I have talked about this in the past, which is that law enforcement, at least for a long time, was pretty bad at tracking down specific problem users on websites who had made true threats or had engaged in pretty clearly illegal activity. Do you have any sense of, Cloudflare says that they're doing this because of a failure of law enforcement, how credible that is?
I mean, I think that, yes, it's still very hard. It's very hard for anyone to do this, to figure out sort of where these people are. And I think the part of the problem has been jurisdiction, just sort of dumb bureaucracy things. But, you know, if it's, you know, you find out that the company is based one place or the hosted on a server based one place and then an account is doing it through another. But, you know, also, Cloudflare, for what it's worth, Matthew Prince, the CEO, said in the second blog post where they said, you know, we're going to cancel their account, that they typically think they should wait for law enforcement and not do this. And this was extraordinary circumstances that they had to act. So, he says that this is not precedent setting. I think that that's kind of not really his call, though. I mean, it might not be precedent setting necessarily for his company, but I feel like once his company does that, people are going to be more expectant for them to do it in the future for other companies. And even if for some reason Cloudflare is able to resist that pressure, which again, I find doubtful, but it's, you know, it gives people more license to say, like, we should pressure other companies to do this then. I mean, I think once you have that happen, it's easy to be like, well, why did you do it for that site and not these other sites? Or how is this any different? And it's easy to now suddenly find yourself in an opportunity where anytime that there's threats online, because Jesse Singel and Katie Herzog, who do the Blocked and Reported podcast, were digging through some of the stuff. And they said, you know, as far as they can tell, there were only two direct threats posted on Kiwi Farms about this woman in question. I know that I don't think that it came down exactly to just the direct threats. I think that Cloudflare was also concerned because there was a lot of, you know, doxing and reporting the location of this Twitch streamer Keffels and things like that. So it wasn't just like someone saying like, I'm going to get her, but like, you know, maybe actually doing things that would give people the opportunity to do that. But I also don't think that there's evidence that there was a lot more happening there in terms of direct threats than we can see on like so many other sites or forums.
I think that raises important questions about scale and how we view other platforms and the sort of safety or security actually offered by independence. Because traditionally we think of independent websites as more secure against moderation than large platforms, but in this case, because this community existed independently of anything else, it wasn't a Facebook group or a network of friends, then it could be targeted and taken down as a whole. Whereas, yes, much worse activity probably happens every day on Facebook from the sorts of things that have been banned in the past or that have been uncovered. You've had, you know, Facebook groups for selling brides in the Sudan. But at this point, a lot of the kind of Kiwi Farms community and activity has moved to Telegram, which, while it's a centrally run platform, it's one that has sort of notoriously refused to comply with both takedown requests and even court orders. And so in a sense, at this point, Kiwi Farms may be safer as a Telegram group than it was as an independent website, because as much as people may want to get it removed from Telegram, I think it's much less likely that Telegram's infrastructure providers will pull their support from the app or its service over this small group within it.
Yeah, I think that gets at another sort of fundamental question about all this is like, what good does it actually do? I mean, you saw this with people talking about 8chan, and then 8chan just sort of popped back up as Kiwi Farms or elsewhere, or that, you know, people just migrated there. Like every time people are like, haha, we're gonna get this one website canceled, and then, you know, all this bad stuff will stop. And it's just, I mean, it's the internet. It's an international thing. Even if American, you know, or certain countries, hosting providers and everything are going to be pressured, like you said, like there are others that aren't, and you can't actually stop this kind of like hateful content from being online, no matter how much people might wish that's true.
Yeah. Greg Lukianoff likes to say, how on earth am I better off by not knowing how you really feel about something?
Right.
And so in a sense, Cloudflare is this one of the services that a group like Cloudflare provides, is that we all get to see what these people think about things, and we don't have to join a special hidden group on Telegram or somewhere else.
That was like after the January 6th riots, too. There was a lot of people complaining about Parler, which, again, was not necessarily had the most or the worst of the people talking about, you know, doing stuff on January 6th, but happened to be more fringe and independent than some of the others. So I think that it kind of became the scapegoat for it. But same thing. I mean, after that, there was reports that a ton of people had moved to had moved to Telegram and encrypted messaging apps and things like that. So same sort of thing. It was like, now we're just, I mean, it's not stopping this sort of content or an activity and organizing or whatever from taking place. It's just making it, like you said, harder for people to see.
And we can never in advance know where cultural turns or international events will go. But I think in retrospect, driving segments of the American right to a fairly Russian populated Telegram in the months before the invasion of Ukraine probably didn't help with the sort of right fifth column we've seen in the West since. There's been a lot of harassment in a sense on both sides in this conflict between Kiwi Farms and Keffels. And while obviously there are real qualitative differences between doxing and attempting to ratio people on Twitter, I think in both cases, the danger or potential for harm stems from the scale of the interaction and the unknown audience. And in a way, we can see them on the same spectrum, perhaps at very different points on the spectrum, but nevertheless, on a spectrum that leverages the unpredictability of internet interaction in order to scare or coerce or discomfort.
And also, I think, you know, it's cases like this, people are like, okay, well, who could argue with them canceling, you know, Kiwi Farms accounts, which I know some people could argue with it for a lot of reasons, but the vast majority of people are just gonna be like, oh, I've heard this is a hate site. I've heard this is a harassment site. Like, sure, take it down, whatever. We don't need that sort of thing online. But, you know, the Prince, the CEO of Cloudflare, and their public policy head, Alyssa Starzak, in their first blog post, and maybe you guys talked about this last week, but, you know, actually said that the reason that they don't like to do this is because it tends to give authoritarian regimes cover and say, well, you did it for them, can you do it for these other groups? And it ultimately ends up coming down hardest on people that are marginalized more generally, not just on people who are making threats, but on people who have like unpopular politics, or, you know, who are culturally marginalized or things like that.
I think that's very important to recognize, especially as we talk about precedent, because while this has been billed as not setting precedent, those last two decisions around 8chan and the Daily Stormer were also presented as non-precedent setting. And yet, just as you said, as Prince tells it, Cloudflare's own language and justifications for removing the Daily Stormer were used by authoritarian regimes to justify removing groups or websites that, you know, we would find no problem with and are very repressed in their own societies.
I mean, I think, yeah, Cloudflare seems like they're in a really hard place. And they're doing this weird thing where they're kind of like, this is not precedent setting. We really don't want to do this. We really aren't going to do this again. And like you just said, they've done it, you know, this is the third time now. And they keep saying, we're not going to do it again. And then they keep doing it. I get the sense, I do believe them that they don't really want to do this, right? Like they, I think that they would prefer that this not have to be their course of action. It really, you know, the CEO has described himself as almost a free speech absolutist. I think that they have really tried to avoid this. They haven't easily caved a lot, you know, with all the pressure that they've gotten through for all sorts of websites. But they are facing so much liability, I think, if they don't. And that's another part of this that we don't talk about, is that, you know, there's so much pressure on tech companies from the U.S. government right now in all sorts of capacities, whether it's lawsuits or whether it's congressional hearings and things like that, to so much pressure for them to be liable for anything that they that is posted by their users or by people that they are even remotely affiliated with. Right now, like, Visa is in trouble for processing payments on Pornhub because of alleged exploitation on Pornhub. There's just like, we're branching further and further out in the intermediaries that are being accused for or trying to be held liable for whatever sort of content people find objectionable. And so I think that Cloudflare is sort of just recognizing that it's not just like, oh, we don't want to be looked at bad by people online, but it's like, oh crap, we might face like huge liabilities or huge new regulations that would sort of cripple us if we don't act quote unquote voluntarily.
And frankly, it's just a mark of a very good product. There was recently a report alleging that 4 out of 10 hate sites used Cloudflare. But hate sites are often targeted with DDoS attacks, just like other unpopular or sort of dissident sites, and so we would expect them to be on the kind of most useful, best service around. But in offering such a uniquely important service, Cloudflare then becomes a target. Its gatekeeping power is too useful for everyone for them to be left alone.
Do advocates, the people who are rallying around taking these sites down, or for a company like Cloudflare to stop providing those sites with services, do they know or recognize, or is there any sort of introspection that, you know, we're just sending these people underground where the people they end up, you may end up associating with will have much more abhorrent views or be willing to take more abhorrent action?
I think there's some people who don't actually think about that and honestly think that, you know, that this will make a difference, that if these things are not, if this sort of speech or organizing or whatever is not, you know, happening very publicly, then it won't be happening at all. But I think that there are also just people who don't care. You know, I mean, their goal is to sort of score points against people who do this kind of thing. Because it's not just people, you know, you see this not just with, people who are making direct attacks or doxing or doing harassment, but just sort of all sorts of views that they don't like. And, you know, you see a lot of people trying to get their ability to use Substack or something, for instance. You see sort of the Kiwi Farmers placed in the same category as, say, like Glenn Greenwald or something, or other people that people just like don't like. You know, you see them being like, well, why is Substack hosting hate speech by hosting blogs newsletters by Glenn Greenwald and Freddie DeBoer or whoever? So I think that it's, you know, partly just a means to try and pressure companies into stopping hosting the speech of, you know, all sorts of people that are found objectionable.
Elizabeth Nolan Brown is a senior editor at Reason. Will Duffield is a policy analyst at the Cato Institute. Please give a rating to the Cato Daily Podcast on your podcast platform of choice and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.